So then our time right now is, she's not imported, she's a little homegrown chicken here. She's got to share some of her thoughts with us tonight. She's just a plain homegrown kid. She runs the computers all day. I think that we wouldn't have working computers out there if it wasn't for this little kid. There's not much she can't do, actually. Beep, beep. Did you hear that, Lindy?
Oh, you heard. If you will.
Really, I can't do DVD players.
Good. See, that's one thing she can't do, so that's good.
That's like her more now.
Yeah, so we're not completely inferior. So, Lindy, I don't know if you'd like the light on or not, but if you want it on?
No, thank you.
No?
No.
Okay. She's going to come up here and light up the world herself. This is our Lindy backbite. Oh.
Oh, come on. Wait till I get up here and then hit me with it.
Treatment.
Otherwise my back gets all your applause and it's just isn't the same.
Kind of put it together though, didn't it?
It was something. But I like it from the front better. Spirits with me when they make me laugh.
Right. You know you like it all the way around.
Yeah. Yeah, Ruthie, I was born to be wild.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm a collector. Some of you may not know this about me. I collect mugs, magnets, Beanie Babies. Don't know why I started that one. I'd stopped, but I have so many Beanie Babies, I don't know what to do with them. And baseballs. And I collect stories. And tonight I wanted to share with you some of the stories that I've collected over my lifetime that have special significance to me as relating to things that I most need to learn about life. And I have what I call Lindy's Laws for Life that are created out of these stories. And the first law is the law of time. And the story goes like this. Once upon a time, a priest, for no known reason is he a priest, but I guess because he's a spiritual holy man, has some wisdom built in, was being chased by some bears. And he came to a cliff, and he started to climb down the cliff to escape the bears, but he saw that below him there were lions leaping up to grab his feet in their jaws should they come close enough. So there he is, hanging on a vine on a cliff, bears above him, lions below him, and he notices on the vine there's one perfect strawberry. So he eats it, and it's the best strawberry he ever tasted. Now, the moral of that story is, of course, that it's important to be in the moment because we are all chased by the bears of yesterday and afraid of the lions of tomorrow, but we are here today. I know you've all heard yesterday is a cancel check, tomorrow is a promissory note, but today is cash. So spend it wisely, of course, is how that finishes up. I prefer cash, personally. But so many of us are chased by those bears and lions that we forget to be here now. We're here, but are we here now? Are we looking forward to what's coming, either in trepidation or in anticipation? Are we reflecting back on what we did or didn't do in the past, for good or for bad? Or are we able to be present in the moment? So Lindy's Law of Time says, be here now. I don't always manage to manifest that, but laws are about wanting to follow them, not always succeeding. Look at the speeding law, for example. Which is another story that I collected just last night, and I wanted to make public acknowledgement to my angel friends. I was driving north on 5 after a literally hellish day at work. I had at least 2 meltdowns yesterday at work, and I was on my way to my therapist. So I was driving a little fast on 5 north from Chula Vista towards Pacific Beach because I'd left work 20 minutes late. And my favorite song came on the radio, so that was one thing. It was Josh Turner, Your Man, in case anybody wants to know what Lindy's favorite song is. Baby, lock the door and turn the lights down low. Uh-huh. I would pay money to see Josh Turner read the telephone book. But anyway, I was going about 80, which is only a few miles an hour over my normal speed, I will say. And in my right-hand passenger window, there was a highway patrolman. And, you know, I pay attention to what's behind me. There was nothing behind me. I pay attention to what's in front of me. There was nothing behind me. Oh! Hello. But here's the God story part. I noticed he was there. I read Highway Patrol on the side of the door. I slowed down to 65. And he literally disappeared. He didn't slow down and pull back. He didn't turn off. He just was no longer there. I'm not kidding. It was a miracle. Spirit came up in the guise of a highway patrolman to say, Lindy, slow down and pay attention. And then they got my attention. I said, I acknowledge your presence. And they disappeared. And they took the form of a highway patrolman. So I was present to a great extent after that. Where I had not been present before. I was too busy humming along with Josh Turner. So I was in the moment. That was a rare occasion, but it reminds me that it is possible to be in the moment, to enjoy that perfect strawberry. Yeah. Okay, the next law is Lindy's law of space. If be here now is important, be here now is equally important. And this story is one that I found when I was about 12 years old, and it made such an impression on me that I kept it and I've retold it on multiple occasions like this one ever since. And it's the story of a young boy named David. I don't know that the name means anything, but that's the way I learned the story and that's the way I feel compelled to share it. A young boy named David, he's about 7 years old, I guess. And David lives high on the side of a valley. And every morning he looks across the valley and he sees the golden windows of the houses on the other side of the valley. And he thinks, why can't I live in a house with golden windows? His life wasn't extraordinarily painful or arduous. He just wanted to live in the house with the golden windows because they were so beautiful as he looked at them every morning. So one morning he gets out of bed and he says, today I'm going to go to the houses with the golden windows. And he starts walking down the slope of the valley and across the valley floor. And he's only 7, so it takes him all day. And he gets to the houses on the other side of the valley, and he looks at them closely, and sure enough, the windows are ordinary glass. And he turns around to look at his own house across the valley, and in the evening sun, the windows of his house are golden. We all chase the golden windows across the valley, and we forget to find them where we are. It's like the lions and the bears. It's like the past and the future. It's there, or there, or there, or there, or there, but it's never here. Or can we make it be here? Can we recognize that here is where we are and where we need to be, and we're here for a reason? I'm much happier being here than I am at work, for example. But if I'm still thinking about work while I'm here, I'm missing the essence of here. So we need to be here as much as we need to be here now. You know, it's been said that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, but I heard a better one. The grass is greener where we water it. So if we water it where we are, then our houses all have golden windows already, and we don't need to walk across the valley to find them. We're not looking outside of ourselves for inspiration. We're looking inside of ourselves for the divinity that we are and the inspiration that that divinity gives us. Be here now, and be here now. The third law is based on a story that I also collected when I was quite young. And I wrote this one on a 3x5 card because it's only about 6 words. And I was about 6 years old probably. But I copied it out of somewhere like Reader's Digest or something like that that has lots of little short 2-sentence stories. And this is the one where the law is that of limiting perception. And the story is of a young girl. Notice there are lots of young children in my story so far. I hadn't put that together before. Anyway, this young girl says, "Daddy, teach me about arithmetic." And he says, "Okay. 2 plus 2 always equals 4. And she says, "Oh, Daddy, you're so silly. Don't you know 2 plus 2 raindrops plus 2 raindrops equals a puddle?" If we always look at 2 plus 2 and see 4, then how much is our perception of the world being limited by that, by staying inside of that box? 2 roses plus 2 daffodils equals a bouquet. 2 pairs of shoes plus 2 pairs of shoes equals a closet full. You know, there's a psychological test that's made up of, I think it's either 9 or 16 dots on a page, and you're asked to connect the dots with only 4 straight lines. And you must draw outside of the dots in order to make that puzzle work. Well, we're trained from birth somehow to color within the lines and to never go outside of the space. Last night on The Amazing Race, the candidates, the contestants or participants or racers or call them what you will, the cast, I guess, was asked to put together a statue, a Greek statue that was in pieces. And there were 2 extra pieces that didn't fit in the puzzle. When they completed it, they had a full height standing statue of a man. And 2 pieces left over. And at least 2 of the teams had excruciating trauma trying to figure out how to put those 2 pieces into the puzzle. They were trying to color inside the lines. It never occurred to them that there might be 2 pieces left over. And they almost got eliminated because they took so long to figure it out. Fortunately for me, because I liked them a lot, those couples were able to figure it out eventually. And although they finished in the bottom of the pack, they still stayed in the race. So how do we let our perceptions limit us? How do we let the way we view the world keep us from having everything that is ours to achieve or accomplish or acquire? That's a rhetorical question, of course. Each one of us has to think of that on their own. But I just want you to remember that 2 raindrops plus 2 raindrops equals a puddle. And 2 roses plus 2 daffodils equals a bouquet. And anytime something comes up where you think, "Oh, that's easy, that's 2 plus 2, look again. Look with a little bit of different perspective and see if it's still true. Limiting perception is only one way we limit ourselves. Another way we limit ourselves is with limiting expectations. I've told this story before, and it's about another young boy. This one doesn't have a name, but you'll see why it isn't important when I finish. The young boy decides he's going to walk away from home to find God. He's been raised in a very spiritual family, and he's only about 6 years old, but he knows that if he goes walking in the park, he'll find God. So he packs his backpack full of Twinkies and root beer, and sets off to find God. And he goes about a block, block and a half, and there's a park bench in the park. And sitting on the park bench is an elderly woman. And she's just sitting there, not even really looking around. So he takes his backpack and sits next to her and smiles at her. And she smiles back. And they just sit there quietly, absorbing the nature around the park. And eventually he opens his backpack and offers her some Twinkies and root beer. And they share the Twinkies and root beer. And several hours pass and they don't actually carry on a conversation at all. They just smile, nod, eat Twinkies and drink root beer. And eventually, the little boy thinks, well, my mommy will probably miss me by now. I better go home. So he gets up and starts to walk away and turns around and runs back to the elderly woman and hugs her. And she gives him the most beautiful smile. And he runs home to mommy. And mommy says to the little boy, what did you do today? And he says, I went to the park and had Twinkies and root beer with God. Meanwhile, on the other side of town, the elderly woman walks home, and her middle-aged son says to her, you look fabulous. What did you do today? And she says, I went to the park, and I had Twinkies and root beer with God. And you know what? He's so much younger than I expected. This story describes the way that expectations can limit perception, because she had an expectation that God would be an older man, probably with a beard. And whoever said God was a man anyway? Well, a man did, I guess. That was not rhetorical. I knew the answer to that one. Okay. But expectations can limit us because we can only expect what we already know or know about. So it's difficult to expect a miracle because we haven't had that much experience of seeing miracles, and therefore we don't know how to expect them. There's a story, and I don't know if it's true, Dee, I just heard it like the Mexican crabs, about the Indians of the New World when Columbus's ships sailed up to the shore of the New World. And the story goes that because the Indians were not trained, they didn't have the right brain wrinkles to see ships that were tall above the water like that, that they couldn't even perceive the ships, that they knew something was there but they didn't know what it was until the longboats were lowered into the water and began to row toward them because they had experience of boats on the surface of the water of that size. And then when the white men, Columbus and his people, told about the ships that they came on, the Indians learned enough to be able to see those ships. Now, as I said, I don't know if this story is true, but it really illustrates the point I'm trying to make, that expectations are based on our known universe. So if we really wanted to have a miracle, we'd have to expect something out of our known universe, and because we are almost unable to do that, our expectations are limiting us from being the recipients of miracles. So, again, if we're expecting something, let's broaden our horizons and start with expecting more and graduate to expecting everything. And don't let your expectations limit you. My brother has, for a good part of his life, had an expectation of being unhappy in his job. And as a result, he's lived a self-fulfilling prophecy and been unhappy in his job. At some point, he decided that he was going to have this job for the rest of his life, so he might as well start to enjoy it. And his life has been a lot happier and easier ever since then. And so is his job, by the way. We get what we expect. Let's expect more. And then we would get more. The next law I call my law of life and loneliness. And it's the most important story that I'm telling with you tonight, sharing with you tonight, in my life today. And it's based on this book that I've shared with you before called Paddle to the Sea. And I was read this book when I was a child. It's a Caldecott Honor winner, and it was published in 1941. So I must have been on the back end of the book, you know. I wasn't there when it was written, but nearly. A little too nearly. But if you don't know how old I am, then you weren't here a couple months ago when I told about that, too. So there. Anyway, the story of Paddle to the Sea is the story of a young boy who carves a canoe with an Indian in it up in the Great Lakes region of Canada, like on the shore of, like the north shore of Lake Superior. And he puts the canoe with the Indian carved into it. He carves on the bottom of it, "Please put me back in water. I am Paddle to the Sea." And he puts the canoe up at the headwaters of a stream during the winter. So the water's not flowing, it's frozen. But as the thaw melts the stream, the canoe and the Indian in it are swept downstream into the Great Lakes regions. And this canoe has lots of adventures. He gets washed up on a beach, and some beachcombers come along and say, "Oh, what's this?" And they pick it up and they look at it, and on the bottom it says, "Please put me back in the water. I am paddled to the sea." So they put the canoe and the Indian back in the water. At another point in the story, the canoe gets lodged in the bark of a tree, which is going into the sawmill. And the sawmill attendant sees this Indian in the canoe coming toward him as he's sawing the log, and he turns off the saw and saves the Indian in the canoe. And he reads the bottom and it says, "Please put me back in water, for I am paddled to the sea." I don't know if you can see this, but here's a picture of Paddle to the Sea in the bark, right before he was about to get cut open here. So Paddle has lots of adventures, and ultimately somebody puts a copper plate on the bottom instead of the carving, because the water and the wind and the wood are all chancing to get a little eroded. So somebody puts a copper plate on the bottom that says, "I am paddled to the sea. Please put me back in water. And I have been to," and they put the name of the place where they lived when they found him and put the copper plate on. And others, as they found him and put him back in the water, etched their cities on his bottom copper plate and put him back in the water. And eventually, Paddle to the Sea made it all the way to France, because he went through the Great Lakes, over Niagara Falls, out the St. Lawrence Seaway, and across the Atlantic. But this is such a wonderful metaphor for life, in my judgment. We are all paddled to the sea. We all need somebody to put us back in the water. And in my metaphor, the sea is a relationship with God, a God connection. We are all living, trying to get closer and closer to God. And we need help along the way, because we get stalled on the shores and the beachcombers have to pick us up and help us, or we get lodged in the bark and about to be destroyed by a sawmill. And we have to be rescued and put back in the water and put back on the straight and narrow path towards God. The wisest man I know once said, "Life is a 1.5 person job." And what he meant was that no one can get through it alone. You need someone to support you when you're weak. You need someone to encourage you when you're desperate. You need someone to hope when you have lost hope. And each and every one of us needs all of that and more. We all need to be put back in the water, and we are all responsible for putting each other back in the water, because we are all paddling to the sea. Now, the sea looks different to each and every one of us, but if we try to make it on our own, we'll end up beached on the rocks or chewed up in the sawmill, and no one can live alone and survive with joy and with a God connection. So Lindy's Law of Loneliness in Life says, "Please put me back in water, for I am paddled to the sea." Now, this has been real important to me this week with all of my meltdowns, because I had to ask for help. I consider myself a strong, albeit wild, woman. And admitting vulnerability is challenging at the best of times. And admitting vulnerability at work where I'm considered by others to be a strong, albeit wild woman, is even more challenging. So I reached out, and today I actually had a conversation with my boss saying, "Boss, I'm challenged, I need help." And he was very understanding, and he put me back in the water. He said, "Whatever you need to do is okay with me, and I trust you, and I respect you, and all the right things." So had I not sought his help, he wouldn't have been in a position to give it to me. So each and every one of us has a responsibility not only to put other people back in the water, but to ask for it for ourselves. Please, put me back in water, for I am paddled to the sea. And the last story I want to share with you tonight is probably the shortest. Certainly it was the shortest one in my experience of it. And it's a story that I actually experienced rather than one that I read or discovered. And it illustrates the law of love, Lindy's law of love. In about 1987, I was participating in a workshop called Creative Personal Interactions. And you can expect from the title that it might be something interesting. Certainly it was to me. But some of our homework for that experience was to go out into the world for a period of about 3 hours and have three creative personal interactions by our own definition. Although we were told we were expected to share a meal with one in one instance. So I was terrifyingly shy. Hard for you to believe, I know, but it's true. So I was creative. And I shared a meal with a woman who was eating in a restaurant where all the tables were full, and I asked her if I could join her. And she said yes. It was a cafeteria style and perfectly legitimate to share tables with strangers. So I took the easy way out and did that. But the most meaningful personal creative interaction that I had was 10 seconds or less. I went into a bathroom and a young girl there, another young girl, this one about 10 years old, was being verbally abused by her mother. And I looked at her and she looked at me and we made eye contact. And for about 3 seconds, her life passed in front of my eyes. And I smiled at her as if to say, "Sorry." And she kind of smiled back as if to say, "Sorry." And I have thought about her for 20 years. Because we made a spiritual connection in those 3 seconds. We had a personal interaction, and it taught me that personal interactions don't require a certain duration or a certain degree or don't look a certain way. I had to let go of my limiting expectations about personal interactions, to use my own stories to illustrate my last story. I connected with her on a heart-to-heart level. And that's where Lindy's Law of Love comes from. Because Lindy's Law of Love is very simple. It says, it only takes a moment. If we're open to giving and receiving, love only takes a moment. It can be a glance, a smile, a touch, a hug, a terrific massage. Love isn't complicated. Love isn't difficult. Love isn't hard. Love is easy if we're willing to extend our hand, our heart, and our mind. Love only takes a moment. So these are the laws that I try to live by. Be here now. Be here now. Don't let perceptions limit me. Don't let expectations limit me. Remember that I'm not alone and don't have to be, and that I can reach out in love or let love reach out to me in any given moment of my life. And I'm looking forward to collecting more stories because I love sharing them so much and they mean so much to me. So thank you for giving me this time.